What is up, everyone? Welcome to the Potty a Slave podcast. This is episode 30. It's October 1st, 2020, and it's a full moon tonight, so we're all feeling good. Not that we're into that whole Zodiac thing, but you know what I mean. Might as well throw it out there, right?
Is it in retrograde, Nate? Is Mercury in retrograde?
We're not going to call anyone out, but if you know, you know. If you like what you've heard so far, check us out on our socials. We're at Potty a Slave on Instagram and Twitter. Tone's been making some killer videos on YouTube as well. So full videos, some interesting clips. It's got the slides and photos and kind of cool nerdery to go along with it. So that's always pretty rad to check out. And last week we had an awesome guest, Spose, rapper from Maine. We wanted to give another thank you to him. He was great to come on last week and shoot the shit with us and just kind of geek out. So thanks, man. We really appreciate you coming on. If anyone out there hasn't listened, it's one of my favorite episodes that we've done, one of my favorite interviews that we've done. So, and also, you know, him coming from Maine, obviously we're all kind of relating on a lot of different topics, but he was super cool to come on. So without further ado, I'm going to send it over to Tone. What do you got today for me, man?
Yeah, I wanted to shout out, yesterday was International Podcast Day, right? We want to just throw all the love in the world out to our listeners, everybody that's followed us on the social medias, everybody that's interacted with us over time, our friends that have helped pick us up here and there, that all that stuff, and our music podcast brethren out there that we've made some friends with over the last couple of months. So it's been a pretty fun adventure to this point. And if you had told me in March that we'd be doing what we're doing right now, I'm not sure I believe that we've gotten this far. So, big things in the future, and we want to keep this thing rolling. But, happy International Podcast Day to all of our people out there. Twan, what do you got for us tonight? What are we doing tonight?
So we have, we're going to call it a new music roundup. So we're going to react to a few albums that have come out, I'd say in the last week to 2 weeks. Actually, it might be just the last week. So we'll get into that. A headline related to Spotify we're going to react to. And then for the main segment, we're going to toss it back to the year 2000 again. So if you remember, I don't remember what episode it was.
Back in May, I think it was a while ago.
Yeah, we basically did a deep dive into some classic albums from the year 2000, 20 years in the making type of thing. And we each picked one. So I'm excited for this. Do we want to give them away? Nah, you got to wait.
Yeah, wait. Listen to the episode.
We each picked three and we react to them. I would say all of them are classics in their own right. So yeah. Cool episode, and we're going to get right into it. It's a new music roundup. Top of the list, gentlemen.
We got to start with Deftones, right?
Deftones.
Ooh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
And what was this album called?
Ohms.
Ohms.
Who's leading off?
Who's got takes?
I think we all have takes. We've all listened to it multiple times, right?
Oh, man. Who wants to go?
I'll go last. So I'll volunteer last.
Okay. I'll go middle. Nate, you lead off.
Oh, sweet. Nice. Deftones, household name. We love this band. Essentially the soundtrack to our lives. I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but man, this album is friggin' amazing. I love it, man. From first listen too. It didn't take any time. And some Deftones songs and albums take a few listens or whatever. This one, nope, right out of the gate for me. It was in my headphones. I think we can all agree on this. One of the best ways to listen to an album for the first time is in headphones, because you get it gets your full attention, almost similar to listening to something on vinyl, where you're just not distracted, or at least you're putting yourself in a place where you can kind of concentrate. So yeah, I loved it. It's I think it falls into the category for heavy therapy pretty significantly. Songs that really stand out, the first song, Genesis, fucking rips. That song kicks ass. Pompeii. I don't know if that's how to pronounce it. It's spelled differently.
Pompeji. J-I, right? Yeah.
Pompeii with the J near the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That song and Headless. Those three. I mean, the full album is amazing, but those three really stood out to me. Like, damn, these songs rip. I couldn't get enough of it. I have listened to it quite a few times. I'm actually trying to not over listen to it, because I don't want to get tired of it. That's a hard thing to do. I think it's great. And I was really bummed out that this tour got postponed, because I can't wait to hear these songs live. What about you, Tom?
So yeah, I think we're all going to be in agreement here. Going forward, I'm just going to guess. It's terrible. I actually, it's funny. I was at our local record store last Sunday, Bull Moose, and picked it up on gold vinyl because they had it sitting there, and I hadn't listened to it yet. I had a busy weekend last weekend. It just never came to, and I wanted to give it proper time. I could have put it on in the background doing other things, but this is an album I wanted to pay attention to. So
nice.
I waited, put it on, I think, Sunday night. And I was like, okay, I've already heard Genesis, which I love. I think that's a great opening track. It just kicks ass.
Yeah.
And heard Ohms, which is the last track. And I was like, okay, I know the bookends are good. I hope the middle is good. And it was. I mean, my first listen, I didn't like that Pompeji song. But listening to it a couple times since then, totally grown on me. It's one of those Deftones songs, like you said, nice. That sometimes needs to grow on you. It did. I think This Link Is Dead is fucking badass. I don't know if you guys, that song is, I love that song. I think it's the best song on the album for me. But yeah, I will come back to this numerous times over the next couple of weeks, months, years. It's an album that I'm sure I'll live with for quite a while.
So all right, context, love Deftones, top five band all time. I've listened to this album probably five times by now. And I'll say this, and I'll stand by this. First listen, I was like, I don't know. First listen, I was like, I don't know.
Damn.
Yeah. So
we're not friends. Not friends anymore.
Well, hold on.
I'm just kidding.
I'm just teasing.
Not
you.
There. Yeah, yeah. He's got
the bait out there.
This is a tease.
So I think okay. So first listen, I was like, it's okay to good. And then I put it in again, and I'm like, all right, yeah, okay. And then the third time, it's like, well, damn. So I guess the punchline is definitely a grower for me. I don't want to rush into any hot takes. But here's like what I know for 100% certain is it's better than Gore already.
Yep.
It's better than Saturday Night Wrist already. One thing, on the other end of the spectrum, it's not a white pony. I don't think it's as good as Koi, and I don't think it's as good, has the potential to be a Diamond Eyes in my album.
I would agree with that.
But it's funny I say that because like I listened to it today and I was like, this album fucking slays. Like for me, yeah. the standouts besides the bookends, because you kind of get teased on those. Error was great. That Pompeii song, Link Is Dead, and the riff of the fucking album is Radiant City.
Yep.
And I'm just waiting. The countdown is on. This is a Patio Slave hot take. The count is on for a band to come out with the name Radiant City. It's a perfect band name.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's funny though. I was thinking about all the like hype elements of this album for me, and probably for you guys too. One, it's a Deftones album, obviously there's hype. The return of Terry Date, hype.
Yep.
This is the album that Steph gets his riffs back. That was what all the narrative was.
Mm-hmm.
The rollout and the optics were brilliant. So it's like, all that considered, I can kind of see why I was a little like meh on the first listen, but now five into it, I'm like, it won't be a top three Deftones album. It could be a top five when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I could see that. Yep. So you know who else kicks ass in this album? Frank.
Oh yeah.
I think the drumming. Yeah. I think the whole interplay between Steph's riffs and Frank's drums are fucking awesome. And I mean they were on White Pony, right?
Ooh, Abe, you mean?
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's just fucking great. Like it just they play together so well. And they provide such a great backbone to what you're listening to. And then obviously Chino's Chino, and you're going to get great stuff from him when he's locked in like that. But yeah, it's cool. I love it.
Although Frank at the end of that Pompeii song was like, where it has almost like the waves coming in and out. And,
yeah. And like the seagulls and yeah.
Seagulls and mm-hmm. he's got his whatever instrument he's playing, you know, his synth or something.
Yeah. No, it's cool that Frank's like, it's a DJ for sure, but he's definitely he just layers in different sounds. He's something that he brings something to the table for Deftones, which is interesting. But I agree with you, Tone. Abe's drumming is killer. I've always thought he was really good, but it's showcased on this album for sure. I think him and Stefan kind of got the spotlight again on this one for sure.
Do you guys hear the Terry Date influence at all? Because I don't. I didn't. Like if I think about the albums that he was a part of, in this one, I don't see that kind of.
Maybe this
fingerprint
link is dead.
On it.
Maybe this link is dead. That might be the only one, though. Honestly, just the speed, the ferocity of that song kind of fits with early Deftones for me. So
he
was around for was he around for Around the Fur? That was his first one, right?
I think he did Adrenaline, didn't he?
Oh, Adrenaline too. Yeah. Okay. So early Deftones stuff, that makes sense. Like I hear some of that. In that song.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I hear it in the rest of the album, but I definitely hear it there.
Hmm. Interesting. You know what I was thinking when I was listening to it? I think I listened to it five or six times too. And this most recent time, I was like, man, I would like this actually. And I think maybe it's because I had an initial first listen love for this album. But to hear this album front to back, I feel like would be kind of cool live. And yeah, I don't usually
shit.
Say
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I don't usually say that because obviously you want to hear old stuff and you want to hear everything kind of mixed in. And the set list is obviously being built on some kind of ebb and flow. But to hear this album front to back live, I think it would kind of be would be interesting. I think I'd be into that, actually. And I almost never say that, especially for new stuff. But something that came to mind mainly because when I was listening to it, I'm like, it sounded like it was live, especially mm-hmm. Stefan's guitars just rip. I think he's an eight string, I think, right?
Yeah,
I think he's more than your typical bear, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I agree. You're right. He got his riffs back. And that was the kind of the lead up. But I mm-hmm. remember reading stuff on Twitter 3 weeks ago and people being like, this is a really good Deftones album. I'm like, all right, well, now you guys have got me excited.
Right.
Like, I want this to be a really good Deftones album. And somebody said something about, if you like the new surprise Hum release this year, you're going to love the Deftones album. I'm like, okay, well, I love that. So shit, man, like, stop teasing me. Like, let's just hear it. And I don't think it disappointed. It's taken a little bit of time for some of the songs, but I mean, it's been a week, not even, right?
Yeah.
I'm definitely like, okay, yeah, this could totally be slotted in the top five Deftones albums for me.
Definitely a grower. Yeah. Yeah, definitely a grower. And I think it'll continue to grow. I would say it's borderline great album mm-hmm. for me now, where first listen, I thought it was just good.
Totally.
Yeah.
So what other music came out this week? We had a couple other albums that, obviously not the fanfare for us, like Deftones, but some stuff that we checked out.
You got Menzingers, which you've been like telling me about forever. Mm-hmm. And I mean, man, we got a lot going on, right? Sometimes it's hard to check out everything. I think it kind of alludes to what you're talking about, Tuan, on some episodes ago, where you're working on a label, or was it the college radio, where you're just getting so much stuff all the time. It's hard to give it the time of day. But I did check this out and became a fan today or yesterday when I checked out this album. I liked it, man. And now I think I will check out their back catalog. But yeah, I was able to kind of spin some things. It reminds me of like pub rock, like mm-hmm. something you'd see in like a pub. And songs that kind of stood out. One, I mean, I guess just based on the name, was called Portland. Is that?
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's about Portland, Maine. I mean, who knows? They're from the East Coast.
I'm not sure. I like them because they're pop punkish for people in their 30s, which is me. It's us, right? Like, it fits. If you listen to the album After the Party, that's kind of what they're all hit turning 30-ish, and the party was their 20s, right? We all had a party in our 20s, and you hit 30 and you're like, all right, I gotta be an adult for the rest of my days. I should probably stop being a you know, snot-nosed 20-year-old. And it just fits. And this was another kind of extension of that album when they put out Hello Exile last year. And this is just a reworking of those songs. That's called From Exile. And makes sense. It was a rework during Exile that we all faced back in March, April during the start of the COVID lockdown. So mm-hmm. it was cool. I enjoyed it. It was a good background, chill, end of the night, you know, maybe watching an NBA Finals game type of situation. And listening to them, but I like them. I like them a lot, and that's why they were a show regret for me last summer.
Yeah, this is a cool album. I love when bands kind of strip it down like this. Like I like everything that I've heard of theirs. Yeah, for this one, it had kind of like a folky vibe, and then in a couple places, it actually reminded me of the Smiths, especially on mm-hmm. High School Friend. I was like, this has mm-hmm. Smith vibes, which I'm in on. Like, I'm all in on that.
Nice.
I love Morrissey, and I love you know, kind of the whole Smith's legacy. Yeah, I really dug it. And it shows you, I mean, what was the whole shtick with this album? They did it. Did they do it through like Zoom sessions or something? There was something.
I don't
like that, maybe.
Yeah, I gotta look that up. I'm not sure. But I know that it was early on in the quarantine. They were like, let's rework that album. And that album had just come out last year. So,
yeah.
And it's a cool, I like that album when it's not stripped down. So go back and, I mean, Nate, you like this album. Go back and check out the,
Hello,
the plugged in version.
Yeah.
Go back and check out the plugged in version, because there's some cool songs. The way that they were originally meant to be heard was pretty cool too. I think you'll like those.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely check it out. In fact, that's actually why this podcast is so cool, even for us three, let alone like people that are listening, because it's like, you know, you're telling me about this music, and then I have to, you know, we have to listen to it as almost like homework to prep for the episode. And now I'm like, oh, wow, I'm a fan now. Can't wait to check out. Now I have like some music to upload. Kind of like when someone like recommends like a Netflix show. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, man, I've been looking for something new. Like, this is awesome. Yeah. Now I have something locked and loaded. So props to you, man. I really appreciate you throwing this out there. And, you know, there's other music that came out too that may not be as exciting. I don't know. Vin Diesel, I guess he put out a song.
Oh, yeah. That was, we were going to leave with that. This is going to be the Vin Diesel episode. But he put out a song with Kygo that, honestly, I don't hate. But it's like, I don't need to hear Dominic Toretto singing. Go back to the Fast and the Furious, Vin. Let's go.
Yeah, his brand name will actually hurt him in how that song does.
Yeah.
Because I think if it was someone else, it would just it fit in with the genre. You know, people kind of think a certain way about it, trying to catch
it. He should have come up with a cooler name than Vin Diesel, which was a cool name when it was his acting name in 2000. Speaking of the year 2000, right? Isn't that when the first Fast and the Furious movie came out?
I don't know.
I think it is. Yeah. I'll fact check that real time, but I'm pretty sure it's right around that time. We were in high school, so that makes sense.
Jeez. Another reason why the year 2000 was just pure gold, right? Yeah. So we won't go too much into the song, but
we can jump into another.
I breezed through it, and it was just, I felt like I was in an H&M store or something. It just kind of background music.
That's a great way to put it.
An Abercrombie or something.
Like, totally. I'm browsing Abercrombie and Fitch, and Vin Diesel's EDM song is playing in the background.
There are parts where you can like tell it's him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But people probably, you know, hate on this for more than it deserves.
2001. Yeah. I was so close.
Oh, man. Yeah. Can't hate. It's COVID. You got to make money somehow, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and maybe he's always wanted to be a music star. Not a movie star.
Like Hasselhoff.
Well, that actually reminds me. Another guy that is kind of venturing into other things is MGK.
Good segue.
Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh, yeah,
so Machine Gun Kelly dropped, what was it, Tickets for My Downfall?
Tickets
to My Downfall. So this is his, you know, I'll use it in quotes here, pop punk album. Yeah. And we're not talking like Screeching Weasel, OG pop punk. We're talking... I call it Hot Topic pop punk or mall pop punk. Yeah. It's really that's what it is. And it's not meant to be a diss, and you'll understand that when I give my take. But do you guys check this one out?
Yep, I did. Did you, Nate?
Yeah, I did.
Do you want to go first? You want me to go?
I'll go, yeah.
All right.
You know, I don't know a whole lot about him. I've actually seen him talking about like the dual career. I've seen him act a few times, right? He did a few movies. And I listened to some of his rap, obviously the one that where he was dissing Eminem, stuff like that. I listened to it. I didn't get a whole lot into it, to be honest. Initially, like the first song that came on, I was just like, oh, okay. Clearly he's got some Social Distortion influence, some Mike Ness thing going on, / Rancid, maybe with Tim Armstrong. So I initially saw that.
Can I stop you?
Mm-hmm.
That's Travis Barker, isn't it? He produced it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Travis Barker on the drums for sure. And obviously him and Tim Armstrong from Rancid had Transplants as a side project. So, yeah, that might have been kind of that aspect of it. But, I thought it was okay. I don't know how I felt about it. It was a quick listen. You know, I wasn't really given a whole lot of time of day. So, I don't know. What about you?
So, I don't like the persona of Machine Gun Kelly. I just don't. Mm. Something about it rubs me wrong. I think it feels industry plant in a 2020 kind of way to me. I know that maybe sounds like bullshit to somebody younger than me, but for me, I feel like he is trying to do all these things to be relevant. Like he's just, okay, well, I'm going to put this out there to see if somebody like me will listen to it, or somebody who likes this type of music will listen to it, where I've never given him the time of day in the past. And he got me. I mean, there are songs on this album I like. Part of that might be because Travis Barker is producing / I think he played drums on a couple of them, didn't he? Sounded like he did on that first song, title track.
Yeah, there's a few. I don't know for sure like if he has his footprints on the full album for drums, but this song's where you're like, all right, that's Barker fill.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Barker fill.
I'm like, nobody else can do that. That sounds like Travis Barker. It definitely ain't Machine Gun Kelly, so I'm cool with that stuff because it sounded good, but... Am I liking this because I like the genre, or am I liking this because I think there's something there? That's the question that I keep fighting with myself over it. I like the song with Halsey. I think that song's actually pretty good. There were like three or four songs I could say, yeah, I'll listen to that again, but I'm not. Again, I think this is like sound from a guy who's trying too hard and wants to be a social media star.
So I actually checked it out today, and I do like, I remember listening to MGK maybe 10 years ago. He had that kind of YouTube viral hit, which was Chip Off the Block, and he rapped really fast, and he was like 19, and he was like the next biggest thing. And to be honest with you, he kind of fell off my radar. He's been on my radar because you can't escape him, because he dates all these, you know, bombshell women, and it's all over social media, whatever. But I'm all in on this record. I don't know if that surprises you guys.
Really? A little bit.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hot take.
Is it? Yeah, it probably is. So, like, I'm with you, Tone. Like, it's total mall pop punk, like Hot Topic pop punk, and, you know, it's trying to hit a mark. And I actually think it does. I think it hits it perfect. Like, for what it's going for, I think the execution's perfect. There's a song called is it Concert for Aliens, which sounds like Blink-182. And I think I'm with you, Tone. My favorite track is that Forget Me Too with Halsey.
Yes.
Banger times 10.
And oh, it's a great song.
She kills it. Nice. Like, she's got a little edge
awesome.
To her on that.
I like Halsey anyway. I mean, I don't know. It's such a weird thing for somebody my age to like her music, but I do. I think she's good.
Yeah. In that, she sounds like, that song actually kind of sounds like Paramore a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
With her. And, like, I'd love to hear Halsey do an album like this. Like, if you swapped out MGK for Halsey on this album, it would be...
I might be more into it,
It'd be awesome. But, yeah, I think for what it is, I think it was pulled off pretty damn good.
It's produced very well. It sounds great. I would agree with that. I think my issue with it is that the look at me nature of his social media presence is probably my issue, I guess, and not the music per se. So
yeah.
Now I gotta give it another chance, because I really kind of breezed through it, to be, you know, completely transparent. But I like seeing two sides of the coin here, because I actually agree with what you're saying, Tone, because that's all I know. I mean, that's like my perception is this social media person. So it's hard to really dig into music at depth when that's what you see. So it's like kind of a tarnishes the image a little bit, or the music, I guess you'd say. But if it's good, man, you know, that's all that matters at the end of the day. Right?
Totally. So, yep. We're open-minded. We'll try anything here. That's kind of the reason we're doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's funny, when we were reviewing or kind of going through these different albums, I couldn't help but think, like, man, like, listening to these albums and writing notes down like a nerd, it's like, it's almost like wine tasting or like whiskey tasting. You're like, you're looking for different things. You're like, oh, this kind of fits this or that. I'm like, you know, feels like I'm trying to really extrapolate all the different parts of this music. And I didn't quite get there with MGK, so I'll definitely check it out now that you gave it a thumbs up, Twan.
Well, and you said it's easy to breeze through it. You breeze through it. It's easy to breeze through. It's 36 minutes long. So you can totally do that again in three times over the weekend and not even realize you listened to it that many times. So it's easy to do.
So, Nate, using that analogy, how I would approach this album, it's a really, really good cheap wine. It's like a kick-ass bottle of like $12.99 cab or something.
$2 chucks, baby.
Yeah, it's for nice. What it is, it's like, damn, okay, I probably wasn't expecting this, but for that price and for who it is in this case, yeah, I'm into it.
Yep, and I would agree with that. That's a great analogy.
It is, yeah. And speaking of like the social media thing, it's like, is it the ad on Instagram every time you scroll, so you see it all the time?
It will be now.
You're like, fuck it, I'll buy it. I guess I'll buy it.
Facebook and everybody's listening right now, so it will be. Hey, guys, throw us a little promotion. I mean, fuck.
Michelle Obama's podcast has had enough promo.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin Durant got some promo today. I don't know if you guys saw that on Twitter. I was like, cool, Kevin Durant needs more people following him. He's got 9,000 burner accounts.
I know. It's like, I don't want to, I don't want to like protest against Spotify as an artist or as a talent, but I guess the employees are.
Yeah, they want to protest.
Great segue.
Another great segue. Great damn. Segue. Wait, did you guys go to Segway school this week? Because you guys are killing it. I'm a bull in a china shop with that shit. You guys are just like, here's a nuanced take.
With white glove service delivery.
I love it, Nate. Spotify employees, there was a couple of stories about them being anti. They want to censor the Joe Rogan stuff. Is that what I'm reading?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was kind of alluding to. That they want to silence him or they're, you know, we live in a sensitive time, I guess, you know, I'm sensitive. We're all sensitive, whatever, to kind of censor them or whatever. I don't know, man. It seems very weird. It seems a little strange. I don't know if you guys have any takes on this, but it seems a little deep statey that it's not necessarily coming from the employees and it's more of an agenda, but I don't know. I guess time will tell. He hasn't mentioned it because I listen to pretty much every new episode of Joe Rogan, and he doesn't address these things, and good on him, because similar to the trying to cancel, what's his name? One of his good friends, the comedian. They just don't talk about it. They're like, why give it attention? So I think that's smart. But I think it's somewhat baseless, but it's hard to really know unless you're essentially at Spotify to see it firsthand.
Yeah, no, I think, and he wouldn't address it. I mean, he wouldn't. It's probably in his contract. He just can't. I mean, when you sign a contract like that, you do sell your soul. I mean, they own you, and that's why he hasn't addressed, I'm sure, any of the, you know, censoring, or I don't know, has he? Has he addressed any of the censoring?
No, the only thing that's happened is he said something on a podcast fairly recently that he had to backtrack on Instagram with an apology, a correction, which has never been his style. So that's where people are like, conspiracy theory about this. But you're right. He doesn't typically do that.
Right. So I think that apology, if he was in his old YouTube world, would never have happened. It would have just, you move on. I think from a Spotify employee perspective, like, at the end of the day, you have an employer and you have to understand their end game. You know what I mean? And in this case, it's to make money, and you're actually going against your company. So, I mean, I'm sure they're not unionized, obviously. So they're playing with fire, I think.
Well, they're based out of Sweden, aren't they?
I'm not sure. Are they?
They're not an American company. I'm pretty sure they're Sweden. I can't remember. It's one of those two. And they, I'm not sure how, part of me wants to call bullshit on the whole thing because, and I'm not going to take credit for this because I heard it from, I think KFC on Barstool said, is this just a way to make noise for more people to head to the app, to the platform to check out Joe Rogan?
Oh, totally.
So, I mean, we're talking about him right now because of this. Yeah.
And and if one of the biggest media companies in the country, Spotify, versus one of the biggest media companies in the country, Barstool, also talking about Spotify, I mean, we're doing it. It does get clicks. It does get likes. It does get things that people are, you know, interested in. And we're not doing that because of that. We're just genuinely fascinated by the situation. But I could see that being, it's a little bit of viral marketing, right? It's a little bit of let's drum up a controversy and see what people do with this.
That's a good point. Bad press is good press, right? More clicks. Who knows, man? Could be very much so the case. But the thing is, like, there's so many people already listening. I don't think it's going to gain that much more traction.
It doesn't make sense to me either, because you're right. He's huge. He's already huge. He doesn't need, they don't need that.
Yeah. And if Spotify is trying to, you know, make a return on investment that much quicker and spin this for that reason, I mean, that's fucking nonsense. But I don't know. I mean, that's why I go with the deep state thing, just because he always rips on Bill Clinton. And obviously, like, you know, you don't want to go down that road and you don't want to get assassinated.
No. Well, so. the thing about that I don't understand, if that is what they're trying to do, is they're alienating his fans. There are some of his fans that are going to say, okay, you're cutting off episodes and you're not putting those up, or you're making him issue apologies that maybe look a little like he has to do it because of who he works for now. And you float a story about employees going on strike. I mean, is that all those people that like him for who he is with the free speech and the, we'll talk to anybody and we'll put it out there and we don't care and we want to learn things, which I'm on board with. This is just going to alienate those people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. So let's put ourselves in Rogan's shoes. You have 10 years of free speech, whatever, you have your own platform, you have this massive payday. Do you care if three episodes go away?
It's a great question.
You know, like, from his perspective, he's assessing all the noise and he's still performing numbers. He's still getting the bag. He's getting the paycheck. Does he care? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would say no. He's got his hands in so many things that it's just like, on to the next one.
I'd love to hear his take on this. His full unadulterated, not, you know, behind the scenes bullshit stuff. I want to know what he thinks. We'll never hear it, yeah. But I would love to hear that because yeah. You're right. He could just be laughing all the way to the bank, right? Like I moved to Texas. I'm making $100 million a year or over 3 years, who knows? Mm-hmm. And I'm keeping most of that. And you know, cool. You cut out the Alex Jones episode. I don't give a shit. That happened 4 years ago or whatever. You know, like good for him. So I could totally see that being how he feels. I could also see him saying, I don't understand why they're fucking with me. Like, I thought I told them up front I was didn't want to be fucked with, and now it's happening. Like, because that's what happens when you sign on with someone. So, you know, they then hold all the cards if you want to get paid.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what he thinks.
I think it's the latter. I want to think this way, that he initially, when he first announced on YouTube, I believe, where he said, I'm moving to Spotify, nothing's changing. He said it so like verbatim that was like, okay, that's awesome. Nothing's changing. So when things did change, or the episodes got removed, just an act of censorship, basically, I feel like that was against his will and essentially a breach of contract, but there might've been some fine print.
Unless it wasn't in the contract to begin with, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You just admit it all together. Yeah. That could be the case.
I'm making sure that gets in the contract if I don't want it to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's where I call a little bullshit on that. Like, maybe he didn't give a shit and he's, you know, like.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
Here's a thought is, so take a band. When they sign to a major, the major doesn't, unless it's in the contract, the major does not own the rights to all the back catalog. So I wonder if this is a case of that where really Spotify is only in bed with the new stuff. Where.
That may be it.
Where they just say, you know what? Where Rogan was like, all right, yeah, put all my old stuff on so people can still listen to it. But then they're cherry picking it. No, we're not doing that.
Yeah, that I could see that happening. So riddle me this. Why didn't he just go subscription?
Yeah, good question.
Right? Like, why didn't he just say, hey, I want you to pay $3.99 a month to listen to, what does he do, 4 episodes a week?
Something around that, yeah.
3 or 4?
He could get 10 a month. He could get $10 a month.
He could. I'm just saying, even if he said $4 a month, keep some of those people that couldn't afford the 10 a month in the platform. I mean, 10 a month is, you can get all kinds of different stuff for 10 a month, Spotify, whatever. Maybe he's going to take all of that money, that $3.99, $4.99, $5.99 a month.
Point, yeah.
He gets to keep all of that as opposed to cutting in somebody else, especially where they know how to distribute and put on YouTube because they're not paying to put it on YouTube. YouTube's happy to have him because they can sell ads. So why didn't he just go that route? Wouldn't that have made more sense? And then you wouldn't be censored. You get to continue to be you.
I think that kind of goes back to a few episodes ago where we were talking about you got to stay in your lane, because if you don't know how to run a whole service system, I mean, that takes such a huge infrastructure. Maybe thought about it and was like, man, that's a lot of legwork. Spotify is essentially becoming like the platform, you know, you take it or leave it. At the end of the day, like if you're going to run your own independent thing, you have to think about it being another bill that people have to be like, do I really want this? Not really.
Yeah,
so,
true.
You know,
that's a good point.
If anything, people are downsizing at this point, not necessarily adding. So
yeah, and it's only going to change. You know, that's only going to continue to happen over the next 2 or 3 years as things either change or get better, hopefully, at some point.
Yeah, I wouldn't say even downgrading, like I was saying a second ago. I'm backpedaling on that, but I think it's more of just acquisition, right? Spotify's just going to keep buying stuff. So,
oh, at some point, that money's going to run out. They're not making money.
Yeah, true.
Even if they're valuated at $54 billion or whatever, they're not technically turning a profit, so you'd think that would go away. So here's the thing: he's their crown jewel. Why have all this controversy surrounded it unless it's a play to get people to listen? But even then, I don't understand it because this is not the play. Like, there's other ways to go about that.
That's a good point. Yeah, you spend, yeah, it's like spending all this money on a Cadillac, and then you start cutting. You don't get power windows. You know what I mean? It's like, why bother?
What the hell are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing? But Nate, just to get back to the stay in your lane thing, there's services out there like OnlyFans. And I know OnlyFans is, you know, a lot of a different industry most part, but you don't have to be in like the adult industry to get in that. There's platforms like that take a relatively small cut, a small rake. You could dip right into that whole infrastructure. I mean, even take Bandcamp. I mean, that's probably too small for him, but, you know, you could, you know, weave into one of these existing infrastructures and still get 8 out of those $10 or $3.50 out of that $4 and have them do the legwork, right?
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Really good call. No, I was going to say that's a great call. And actually, when you were saying that, I was like, I didn't even think about that. But as you were saying it, I was thinking about all the other things he has his hand in, which is essentially just, it seems like, just listening to it, like limitless plugs on these different companies. And they're probably putting the pressure on, like, well, if you do that, the audience isn't as big. We're not going to sell as many Traeger grills or whatever. The exposure we get on YouTube, where we can literally run the Traeger grill advertisement, or Spotify, where it's literally reaching so many people. I think it's maybe influenced by that, if that's the case. But I think that's also a good call, because if you really wanted truly artistic control, that would have been probably the better play. This is all hindsight 2020, right? At the end of the day,
yeah.
Who knows? It's really hard to say, but it's a good, really good point, actually, Twan.
So think about this. How many people do you think listen to Joe Rogan a month?
Fuck, I don't know.
5 million?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know.
2 million? I mean, let's conservatively say 2 million people listen to him a month.
Yeah.
If those 2 million people like it enough, and I wouldn't even count myself in that because I listen to it occasionally, but if they're cool with paying $10 a month, that's $20 million a month.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? And that's before you've sold an ad. So he could totally have gone just subscription and made this not a thing if he didn't want to get censored. And he's getting censored. It looks like censorship. It's weird.
Totally. Yeah.
Being in the podcast game, obviously on the minuscule scale compared to Joe Rogan, it's a crazy, crazy thought to me that maybe down the road someone's like, yeah, we don't want episode 3. You're episode 3. You said something that didn't even make any sense, and we're going to cut that. Like, I wouldn't want that. I would want it all out there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's funny, though. In typical podcast fashion, where it's like all the information's one-sided and asymmetric or whatever, there's no monthly listener log on Spotify for podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No. They want to hold that info and hold it from you. So they own the cards. So they have the leverage.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's a game. I'm starting to talk like Joe Budden right now.
It is a game, though. You're right.
It is a game. Well, I was going to say back to Rogan on holding the cards close. He's mentioned that Netflix does that same thing where they don't give the metrics to the artist.
Right.
So for him to do a stand-up comedy special on Netflix, like, it's like they basically say, yeah, good job, man. You did great. Cool. How many people watched? And they're just like, a lot. But they
don't worry about it. But did they censor him?
I don't know if that's next.
Right. We wouldn't know because we don't know what he said in the moment unless you were at that show. And that's a vastly smaller group of people than the people who've listened to his Alex Jones podcast.
Right.
But we wouldn't know otherwise. But I think if someone was in this day and age, if someone was at his show 3 years ago, that was a Netflix special, someone would have been like, hey, they cut out this, 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 and this, and here it is. Because
totally.
We viewed it. Or, you know what I mean? Like it would have hit the Twitter world or the social media world that he was censored by Netflix. And that never happened. So it stinks a little bit, right?
The thing is, we won't get the full story. You just won't.
Never. Yeah. We're just speculating.
We'll talk about it next week.
Spitballing, yeah. We clearly like the subject. I mean, it's something that makes we're all nerds about this stuff, like, because we're kind of in the game a little bit, and we pay attention to that stuff. We listen to the pod. We you know, see other pods get promoted and how things are, and it's cool to like delve into that stuff. So
totally.
You're going to hear a little bit about that here. I know it's not necessarily music, but we like that shit.
Yeah.
It's related. We're on Spotify, right? And at the end of the day, like,
this is a podcast. Yeah.
It's a podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah. And freedom of speech, I mean, I thought it existed. It seems like it's dissipating. I mean, just speaking of this or talking about this, it reminds me of that concert with Rage Against the Machine where they're on stage and they're wearing like duct tape and they wrote censored across their chest. Do you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what show it was, but I remember seeing that being like, man, that's a ballsy move. They're like on stage naked and everything. I'm like, man, censorship. And that was like 2000. That was like 20 years ago.
That was people knowing their platform. Oh, 2000? Is that what you're getting into 2000? Now?
Oh, ooh.
The segue. Oh,
another segue?
It is.
Ah, man, I should have known. I think I just got segue trolled.
What is this segment?
The segment
years ago,
tonight. Yeah.
Years ago.
The segment. So back in, I think it was May, we did an episode on 3 albums that came out 20 years ago in the year 2000. And we're, you know, it's October 1st. We figured we should probably run that back, and not because we didn't have other things to do, but we wanted to make sure we hit those albums that came out 20 years ago that meant something to us. So we each picked an album. In the year 2000. In the year 2000. Stolen from Conan and La Bamba, I believe, from Max Weinberg and the Max Weinberg 7. We each have an album, and we're going to do it a little differently than we did last time. Last time we just kind of gave you stats and talked about it and what it meant to us and, you know, the time frame around it. This time we might intersperse a couple of trivia questions for the other guys. So if there's an awkward silence or two, don't worry about it. All right. Who wants to lead off?
Ooh, I feel like we need to spin the wheel for this.
I'll lead off.
The wheel will come back. The wheel will come back.
You want me to lead off?
All right. Go ahead, Twan.
All right. So first album. It's no surprise we love these guys. Rage Against the Machine coming at you with the Renegades album. So Renegades dropped, I think, in either Q3 or Q4 of 2000.
Q4.
It was a Q4? Yeah.
Yep.
So it was later in the year. All right. So I'll just give kind of a recollection of this when it dropped. So I actually didn't even know this was a cover album until it dropped. And basically what I mean by that is Renegades of Funk was the lead single. I had no clue that was a cover until it dropped. And it's a, what, Africa Bambaataa song?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great song to lead with because it does fit them. Like, it passes as an original song, like the messaging and the whole sound, obviously. But yeah, we've talked about this band a lot. I think in one of the early episodes I talked about, you know, Rage kind of got me into heavy music. Well, not only did they get me into heavy music, but there's a cover on this album of Minor Threat. They cover In My Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that nice. Was a huge segue for me in terms of, all right, you hear Minor Threat and then, you know, you get tipped off to the Discord discography. And then from there, it goes on and on and on. And like, oh, well, Ian from Minor Threat was friends with Rollins. Okay, so this world just got a whole lot smaller. But yeah, it falls into that theme of just owing this band so much. Like,
mm-hmm.
And it gets back to, we talked about it a lot, just being the right age at that time. Because if you're much older, you would have already heard of all those Segway bands, you know? So being 15 and hearing this and going back and looking at all those bands that they cover and on the Discord discography and all that, it was pretty badass.
Yeah.
Another thought about this album is most covers, when a band covers an album, they often lean into the style of the band they're covering, where this is not the case. These songs are fed into the machine of no pun intended, of Rage Against the Machine, and it's fucking awesome. Like, I love this album. I'll save the trivia. What do you guys think?
Oh, man. You couldn't have said it better. And it's so true, because The Ghost of Tom Joad, I think, was the first cover they did, right? I think 3 or 4 years prior to this album dropping.
Yeah, 97.
Yeah, 97. And it was such a departure of a Bruce Springsteen sound. And hearing that song, actually, when I first heard that song, and I was a Bruce fan before Rage to an extent, more casual, but I didn't know it was a Bruce Springsteen song. So it's not a deep cut Bruce Springsteen song anyway. And I remember being like, damn, this song's really awesome. Like, awesome. And then when Renegades dropped, it was on there too. And it, like you said, they made it their own, you know, they turned these cover songs into straight up Rage songs, which I don't think any other band can do that. So another standalone Rage Against the Machine thing, because they really just, obviously Morello has kind of his own thing that people can't really replicate. So yeah, man, I agree. I love this record.
So you guys took the words right out of my mouth. And it's funny because Twan told us he was doing Renegades, but that was it. Like, weren't going to look stuff up because he has mm-hmm. trivia and I didn't want to find anything that I didn't already know. So here we are talking about it just off the cuff. And yeah, I agree. And I wrote down, how many of these covers did Rage do better than the fucking original?
No shit. Ooh, dude, it's like, it's uncanny. It's wild when you think about it.
There may be one or two. Okay, the original's better. I think Rage fucking killed all of these covers, and it's like, oh yeah, that's how that song was supposed to be. Sorry, we did it first. It's now yours, Rage Against the Machine.
Maggie's Farm.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Sorry, Bob. Yeah. This is now Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Cypress Hill. How I Could Just Kill a Man. Way better for Rage Against the Machine. As
Dude,
cool as it is from Cypress Hill.
Man.
Sorry. Be real. It is way better.
Just being real with you.
It is. It is. That was my take home from re-listening to this, was that they aren't a cover band. They bend the music to their will, and that's fucking awesome.
Yeah. So couple of the thoughts before we get into a couple trivia questions. So if you think about when this came out, it came out in 2000. Well, what came out in 99? It was Battle of L.A. It came out right after it. So I think if you were paying attention, you could have seen the writing on the wall that this was probably just an album to satisfy a deal.
Yep.
And they were going to break up. Which in the moment, I'm 15 or whatever, 16, you have no idea.
You wouldn't have,
You think there's some legs to that?
Yes, and Renegades was such a big song on the radio when we were, what, 15, 16 years old. So we're just like, oh, cool, this awesome Rage song that we didn't know existed. It's not a Rage song, and the whole album is not Rage song. So looking, 36-year-old me is like, you idiot, they were done.
Yeah, right.
They were done being a band. They didn't want to be a band anymore for whatever reason. And part of it is maybe they're, you know, mythologized because they were done then, and they put out three amazing records and a covers album that they just dominated. And that's what we got. And maybe it's good that that's what we got. At the same time, they would have been absolutely fucking epic the last 10 years of our lives with all that's gone on in the world. So it's a bummer that they were done then, but you're right. I think that was what it was. It was the writing on the wall that this is over.
One, that's an awesome nerd, you know, in-depth kind of detective move, because I think it's actually probably spot on. In fact, we need to find out. We need to get someone from the label or something to figure this out, because it makes sense. Because they're not going to put out a greatest hits, so they're going to do something off the...
Well, they did the live album, right? And that was probably the fifth... This was probably the fourth of a five-album deal, whatever, and that live, whatever it was, the auditorium.
Grand Olympic Ballroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could totally be the case. And it's just so crazy, because these covers are just so awesome. Right from the first song, Microphone Fiend, that song kills.
Oh,
that awesome. Cover.
Yeah, yeah. That one and the bass line at the beginning of I'm Housing.
Yeah. Oh,
doom, doom, doom. It's just so fucking good.
Yep. And the only reason I knew it dropped in Q4 Twan is because I remember picking it up the day it dropped in December, I believe.
December 5th. You are correct, sir.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
So I remember going to Borders Music out by the mall and seeing it on vinyl and thinking, who listens to vinyl still? guess who bought it on vinyl today on Discogs?
No way.
This guy.
Did you really?
Oh, hell yeah.
How much you pay?
I was listening to 35, which,
that's
I mean,
not bad.
It's 28 everywhere. I mean, when it came out, it was probably 24. And I remember looking at it, thinking to my mom, hey, can you know, this is something I would like for Christmas. She's like, what the hell are you going to play that? I'm like, you're right. I don't know. I wish I had a first pressing right now, but it is what it is.
That's awesome, dude.
I was just thinking, we need to have a Nerdery Mythbusters episode where we
don't give too much away.
The A&R dude at Epic, and he comes on for a 15-minute segment or something. All right, you guys want some trivia?
Yeah, some trivia.
Let's do it.
So there's only two questions, because there's actually not a ton out there on this album, really. All right, so who produced this album?
Can you give us a hint?
Fucking massive name, which I had no clue was ever affiliated with this album, or really in this band. I don't think.
I have no clue. Nate, do you know?
I don't know.
What do you got?
Another hint.
I was going to say, that's a basic hint like me.
90s OGs.
You know that Spo song, All Ours?
Yeah.
That's a hint for this. All Ours.
I still have no idea.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
Rick Rubin
produced this?
Yeah, go figure, right? What the fuck?
Wow.
Probably because they were like, hey, we want a producer. And they're like, here's Rick Rubin. And they're like, cool, we don't have to worry about him doing anything. We can just... Sorry, Rick. That's gonna be our thing. I'm shitting on Rick Rubin.
And then he comes on the pod. He's like, "I listen back, guys.
Fuck you guys."
That's where we get censored.
It was just tone. It was just tone.
That's where Spotify pulls the episode. They're like, "Oh shit."
I'm fine with that.
So, do you guys have anything up about this album, like the playlist, the song track list, or anything right now?
No, not at the moment.
No.
If you do, close it out. All right. The other question. It's not really trivia. It's just more testing your memory. There's 12 songs in the album. Name the 12 original artists.
Oh, man.
Oh, shit.
I don't think I can do that. Cypress Hill is How I Could Just Kill a Man. Bruce Springsteen's Ghost of Tom Joad. Maggie's Farm is Bob Dylan.
Yep.
Use Just In My Eyes is Minor Threat.
Yep.
Shit.
Rolling Stones are on there, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Rolling Stones is Street Fighting Man. No.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, Street Fighter Man. Shit. All right, what are we at? Four or five?
Five. Isn't MC5.
MC5. MC5 is one of them.
Kick out the jams. Yeah.
Kick out the jams. Good call, Nate.
Damn, halfway this home, is a guys.
Good question.
All right, give us song names and see if I can do it from that.
Microphone Fiend.
I don't know Microphone Fiend. Or I'm Housing. I've looked this up. It's happened. Africa Bambaataa is Renegades. We talked about that just a second ago.
Seven. Yeah. You want me to give you Fiend and Housing?
Yeah.
Microphone Fiend is Eric B and Rakim.
Yep.
And Housing, cool. I'm Housing is EPMD.
Nice.
Oh, shit. Yep.
Yep.
Damn it. I think I knew that, too.
All right. What songs are we missing?
So the ones that we're missing is Pistol Grip Pump, which none of us would ever get this. It's Volume 10 is the group.
Wouldn't have gotten
that. That song kills, too. Yep.
Beautiful World is...
Beautiful World.
Think Ian Robinson.
Shit. Devo.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
And then there's one...
Dude, that...
That's a great cover.
I was going to say, that cover is a complete departure for Zach
Taylor. Yeah, and it's a great song.
Yeah, like he's straight up like, he's whisper singing.
Yeah. And the last one is Down on the Street, which is Iggy and the Stooges.
Yep.
Oh, nice. Yep.
That's cool. It opened when I finally realized that this album was covers, it opened my world to some other stuff I didn't even know was there. So
totally.
Pretty awesome.
It's like you see Minor Threat t-shirts at Newbury Comics back in the day. They had the Black Sheep, and you're like, okay, I don't know what that, like, I don't even know unless I picked up the CD. And then this was a gateway for a whole different world.
Yep.
Which, we'll end on that, guys.
All right. Who's up, Nate? You want to go? Or you want me to go?
Mine goes a little bit longer. Do you want to go?
I can go. Yeah, I can go. So I chose Cold's 13 Ways to Bleed on Stage.
Ooh, nice.
Which came out September of 2000. This album, I remember listening to WCYY, our hometown rock radio station, and No One was the big single to start, right? That was the song that we all heard. That was probably, I think that was their highest charting song. But this album had like four or five really big songs on it. Just Got Wicked was big, Outer Space, Anti-Love Song's a great song. I mean, it was just a badass nu metal album in the middle of a great nu metal run, like year 2000, late 2000 fall, like throw on Cold. You could just get your license and you're like cruising around with the boys and you're just rocking out that and listening to it today. I felt the same way. And I was like, okay, this is still really good. I could totally revisit this. It's been a long time since I had, it's not the happiest album ever. It's actually a pretty down album, but it's got some just great musicianship. I really enjoy the entirety of the whole thing. Like there isn't a song on there that makes me think, oh, I want to skip this. I want to listen to something different. And Bleed, the last song of the album, is just so good. It's just a great song. What do you guys remember?
I agree, man. This album is really cool. The first time I actually heard them was a demo CD, like one of those like two song sampler CDs you get with, like, I think when you buy another album you get it.
Yeah.
And they were both acoustic songs, covers or acoustic versions of the songs on this record. And I remember thinking, man, this guy can sing. These songs are beautiful. And eventually picking up the record, and it's very melodic. Scooter Ward's got a great voice. Songwriting reminds me a lot of Alice in Chains, kind of like, unfortunately, kind of downer lyrics, right? But speaks to something very, very pure. So I liked it a lot. And still do. I still think it's one of their, it's probably their best record, right?
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. They have a couple other albums that have a good song or three on them, but this is easily their best record.
Yeah, I really do like this record. It's super raw, but at the same time, it's filled with melody. Like, it's this is their best album for sure. I think it's self-titled before that. I didn't really get into, and then Year of the Spider came out after this, which had, Stupid Girl,
which is
Gone Away. Gone Away is a great song at the end.
Yes.
But yeah, this album, it's funny. Like, there's some bands where the singer is just perfect for the band. And I think it's Scooter Ward. He's perfect for this band.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in terms of new metal, I don't want to be too much of a hot take, but it's probably a top 15 to 20 new metal record of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough to say because we chat about all those good bands from a couple episodes ago, but kind of a personal memory about these guys. I saw them at the State Theater in Portland in 2000 and then in 2001, both headlining shows. And there was one unique thing. It was the first and last time I've ever seen this at the State Theater. There was something that happened with the setup. Can you guys guess what it was?
Are you stealing my trivia thunder right now? Because I don't know what you're talking about, first of all. And I've got great questions.
I was at both these shows, but I'm trying to think about what you're
All right, I'll get to it. There was no barricade.
Early.
There's no barricade for a headlining show, and I think they did it because the crowd was super light.
Mm-hmm.
It was a weekday. Might have been in the winter. Low turnout. But yeah, my guess is you didn't have that trivia question.
No, I did not. I never saw them live, unfortunately.
Yeah, cool band to see. That was probably 2000 and then 2001. But yeah, I like this record. I didn't get into them much after Year of the Spider, but this is a great record.
Yeah, that top 15 new metal thing, I think I can probably agree with that. Just because it's front to it's a front to back.
Yeah, there isn't a bad song on the record. There are a couple songs at first you're like, man, I should skip this because I know the next one's really good. And then you listen to it, and you're like, I should just listen to this from the start to the finish because it's awesome. Okay, you guys want to get into the trivia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I got a couple good questions, I think. So their guitarist for 13 Ways to Bleed on Stage was a local musician for where they're from. He'd played with what other band? I'm going to give you, it's multiple choice. Was it A, Creed, B, Limp Bizkit, or C, Shinedown, all Florida bands?
Ooh, can I guess?
Yeah.
I'm going to go LB, Limp Bizkit.
You are correct, sir.
They're both from Jacksonville, right?
Terry Balsamo was with Limp Bizkit before in 1995, I think before Wes Borland was even with them, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then was joined with Cold for 13 Ways and Year of the Spider.
Yeah, I figured it wasn't Shinedown just because of the eras. I don't think Shinedown.
I just tried to find three Florida bands, and obviously Creed was also a Florida band at the same time coming up. So
yeah,
I was hoping to throw you off with Mark Tremonti, but it wasn't Mark Tremonti. I mean, he was in a Christian band essentially, so that wouldn't have really fit for the subject matter of 13 Ways. So
less than Jake,
who is put a song out today for an album for the first time in 7 years. Just throwing that out there.
Ooh, nice.
Nerd facts.
New less than Jake. Yeah, nerd facts. Here we are. During the Cold segment, you get less than Jake talk. only at the Tangent Patio Slay podcast. Yeah. All right, so the next question here. Two songs feature the same musician on this album from another band. If you can name the songs, great. If you can name the musician, great. I want both if you can do them both. And around the same time frame, so you should know both. You'll know who it is.
Okay, can I go first?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
On Bleed, the last song,
yep.
Right?
Yep. What else?
I don't know. Just Got Wicked?
Nope.
Sending the Clowns?
Sending the Clowns.
Is it Sending the Clowns?
Oh, wow. Yeah,
it is.
Damn.
Aaron Lewis was on both of those songs. I knew he was on Bleed. I did not know he was on Sending the Clowns.
It's so funny, though. Like, in that era, like, I look at Stain now, and it's like, all right, butt rock, the singer went country. But in that era, they were listen to Dysfunction and then listen to Tormented. I'm telling you, go on YouTube, look up Tormented. Yeah. That album is way different than you would know Stained.
No, just listen to Mudshovel, and that guy is now the country superstar.
Yeah.
Or country, whatever. I'm not even sure what he is. But all right, my last question. What do the band Cold and Mandy Moore have in common? Yeah, this is a tough one.
You guess, Nate, and then I think I'll guess.
I can give you a hint. I can give you a hint.
Did she date someone?
No.
No.
It has to do with a movie. You're never going to get it. It's great. Did you know the song No One was on the movie A Walk to Remember's soundtrack?
No way. What?
I couldn't believe it myself. I was like, are you fucking shitting me?
Wow.
That is a deep cut. That's a deep cut nerd fact.
That's what you come to the Patio Slay podcast for. I learned that today, and now everybody out in the world knows.
That is
song No
cut.
One was on A Walk to Remember soundtrack, and Cold and Mandy Moore shared the limelight.
Damn, when you said Mandy Moore, the only thing that came to mind is like Scooter Ward is actually the husband in This Is Us.
Yeah, that would be funny. No, his name is Milo Ventimiglia, actually, but just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Nerd fact.
Another nerd fact.
Cool. All right, Nate, what do you got? You got a great 20-year-old album for us, right?
Yeah. Yep. Following the new metal theme here, which we love and kind of came up with, so it's very formative for us. Taproot's Gift was dropped on June 27th, 2000. So ways back, I guess that was our freshman summer, something like that, right? Great time to get into music because you kind of have all this time to check out things in its entirety without being distracted by school. So I really like this album from the get-go. I really dug into it pretty deeply and was able to check them out a few times, mainly in Boston. Saw them at the Axis a few times. They did come to Maine, but I think it was in Lewiston for opening for Disturbed or something, which I didn't check out.
They played the Station in 2008 and I couldn't go.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Nate, I went to that. It was Music as a Weapon tour or something, Disturbed and Taproot and someone else. It was like an O2 or something.
Yeah, I didn't go. Yeah, in Lewiston, yeah. I don't know why I didn't go. Maybe it's because it's not a Disturbed band, but that's nor here nor there. really like this album. I think that I mentioned like the Lane Staley thing earlier with Cold, with like the lyrics and something, stuff like that. There's some similarities with Taproot too, I think. Just the dark lyrics, I think, mainly. More sound-wise, they got some comparisons to like Depeche Mode, things like that, that kind of have some interesting, you know, soundscapes that mirror Depeche Mode style or whatever. But I really like this album. They formed in 97. This album dropped in 2000, so they kind of were independent for a little while. And their come up was interesting because, you know, we mentioned Limp Bizkit. They were kind of following that, you know, trajectory with the heavyweights in the industry. So Fred Durst, at the time, this is like 99 going into 2000, was the A&R Interscope Records. So he brought Steven Richards, the singer, and the band kind of under his wing to eventually or supposedly bring them onto Interscope Records, and it got dragged out for quite a while. So, you know, one thing led to another. It didn't really pan out. I think it just mainly because it was taking so long. So they eventually signed to Atlantic Records rather than Interscope, and there was some beef with Fred Durst and the band. I don't know if you guys remember this. You guys remember the voicemail?
I don't.
No. Yeah.
Oh shit. Yeah, it was pretty gnarly. I mean, back then this is like nerdery TMZ because he left a voicemail on Steven Richards' mom's voicemail. So I think he was still living with his parents. Basically telling
Florida
everyone how
Florida man leaves voicemail on other bandmates' mom's answering machine.
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty gnarly. In fact, we can play it. This is a little
hot take. Yeah, go ahead and play it. All the love, brother. Fuck you.
So where did you get, like, how did that get out?
It was leaked, essentially. But when the band eventually got signed to Atlantic Records, I think it was, we were talking about the whole Spotify thing earlier. Bad press is good press. Obviously, Limp Bizkit was huge then. So I almost feel like it was leaked purposely to, you know, get the press and have those clickbaits associated with Limp Bizkit at the time. But yeah, that's up on YouTube right now, so I kind of pulled it up for this. But yeah, I mean, it just shows the signs of the times, you know what I mean? Like, zero filter, just tell it how it is, you know? But it also kind of gives you kind of a good backstory on how the industry is behind the scenes, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, I love that stuff.
Right? Fred Durst, fucking livid.
Didn't it kind of sound like he wrote it and then read it while he was on the phone?
That's actually what I was thinking.
I'm going to go ahead and say that was staged. That's my thought. Just listen to that.
You think so?
Yeah, he wrote that, and then like, hey, let's that was one of those viral marketing things. Like, we're gonna put this out to the world. I'm just gonna call your mom's thing, and you're gonna record it, and we're gonna throw it out there. It's gonna be on YouTube for some schlubs in 2020 to put on their podcast.
You know what I think? Actually, it probably was. Those were lyrics to a Limp Bizkit song that he just wrote.
Oh my God. Yeah, it had a pretty devastating trickle effect because he was so pissed that he ended up dropping System of a Down off the Family Values Tour in 1999 because they had the same management that got Taproot signed. So it's just like this trickle effect bad thing. Yeah, Durst was kind of a douche back then, notoriously. But
you know, we've all had our moments.
Yeah, I mean, the reason it actually happened, the reason they, you know, fast-tracked is basically they were shopping to get the record signed, and Durst or Interscope was essentially dragging their feet. So they just went ahead and said, hey, we're not going to like sit around and wait. So they ended up shopping it around. And we mentioned Rick Rubin earlier. They shopped it, you know, Rick Rubin gave it a listen and was interested and gotten some hands like that. So obviously those are heavyweights in the industry. And, you know, who would want to wait, you know, times of the essence. So yeah, I love this album, and it's too bad that was kind of a false start, but maybe not, you know? Interscope's its own thing, it's Atlantic's its own thing, but I like this record a lot. What do you guys remember from this album?
Yeah, I remember this when it came out, and I remember, again, it's always interesting to have the context you have now, where, like, they got big with that song Poem, which was the album after this. What was the name of that one?
Yep.
Welcome.
Welcome. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But in this era, they were, like, you had to sniff around to even know about this band in that era, because I remember, you know, like there were some, like, you know, kind of metal kids in high school that were into this band, and they were not known. Taproot was not very well known when this came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but yeah, another band where the singer fits the band perfect. He's so unique.
Yep.
Like I did listen back to this album today, and in some parts almost sounds off key, but it fits perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool album, and yeah, what do you think, Tone?
Yeah, no, I listening back to all of these albums this week, I was surprised at how much I had forgotten Taproot Knows How to Write a Song, like from start to finish, not just Stephen Richards, the whole band. They were so tight on like four or five different choruses and like transitions to those. It was a great re-listen for me. It's been so long since I had heard it. And I mean, I got into them around when Poem blew up, like most people did at that time. But then going back and finding Gift and listening to Gift again, and being back into that headspace, I was a little surprised at how heavy it was, and a little surprised at how much I liked it still. Those two things kind of stuck out to me in listening to it. And I remember joking, I mean, Stephen Richards was all over the place at this time. He was, you know, doing features on that Reanimation for Linkin Park, which we had talked about couple episodes back.
Yep.
He did a spot on Reveille's Plastic, the song Plastic, which is awesome. He was just kind of, he has that featuring Stephen Richards' voice. Like it fit for like, oh, we're going to change it up and here's Stephen Richards, who no one sounds like, giving us a melody and a, you know, breakdown. And it was awesome. Like it's to hear a full album of that. Yeah. It makes sense as to why those guys had a moment.
Yeah, he's got the singing and screaming thing going.
He did both. And he does it so well on this album. Like he like in the same sentence does it.
Yeah. Yeah, I always thought that was cool to have that quick change up. But yeah, man, I love this record. The singles were Again and Again and I, both super unique, especially I. I is
awesome.
Yeah, that song is like deep. I remember the videos. Actually, I think I first discovered them on MTV2. They were in heavy rotation on that for quite a while. Late night, obviously, like 11 p.m. kind of thing. But yeah, I was super stoked when this album dropped because I kind of got a glimpse of what they were doing with Again and Again. And yeah, still play this record pretty regular. I'd say, you know, a few times a year at least. Yeah, great. I don't know. You were saying top 20 for Cold, 13 Ways. I'd say I'd put it in the top 20 for me just because I have a personal connection to the album.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's like kind of a off the cuff one. But yeah, you guys ready for some trivia action as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Nice. Well, speaking
does it
of
involve more YouTube clips.
No, I could though.
we should clear those with legal first.
Our legal department.
Hey Setla, is that cool? All right, let's do it.
All right.
Hit us with the trivia, Nate.
Taproot was booked on a tour both in 2000 and 2001. And they were actually booked by a family member of the tour. Which family member was this?
Family member of the tour.
Of the tour, kind of like head organizer. Hmm. It's kind of a complicated question.
Very, actually.
Back to school tour, Deftones.
Ooh, nope. Good guess.
Family values?
Nope. Ozfest 2000 and 2001, Taproot was booked by Jack Osborne, Ozzy's son.
Oh.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Jack actually had creative control in booking some of the bands for the tour, which must have been a dream gig back then. I would have loved that.
He was only like a teenager at the time, too,
yeah.
wasn't he?
Yep.
On top of isn't he like a ghost hunter now?
Something like that. Yeah.
I think he's on cable on a ghost hunting TV show.
Are you making that up, dude? Are you?
No, I'm dead serious. Check it out.
I've seen that.
Jack Osborne. I think it's from hell or something like that. It's some stupid ghost hunting show, which sometimes intrigued me.
I haven't seen it, but I've seen like an ad or commercial
for you. Like, is that Jack Osborne? Yeah, it is. Weird. What the hell? What the hell's going on? Yeah. Good question. All right, what do you got?
Yep. So back when Ozfest was essentially booked by Sharon, Sharon, Ozzy's wife, and Jack. So that was a very in-the-family tour. And those lineups for 2000, 2001 were pretty amazing. So very new metal heavy, obviously. And actually, you would have to pull up a YouTube video for this, but I'm not going to do it because it'll give it away. Who does the backup vocals for Taproot? The drummer, the bassist, or the guitarist?
I mean, because you framed it that way. The drummer?
The drummer.
Damn.
Yeah.
He's like Clint from Seven Dust.
Yep. Which you never see. And I actually didn't know this until I saw them live. I think it was at the Axis. And he's got the little headset thing on. Yep. And he's playing there, like singing, especially on some of the songs from Gift, where it's almost like a whisper backing mm-hmm. vocal. And he's back there. And I remember me and Bob, you guys know Bob, we started mm-hmm. laughing because we didn't know. And we see him back there, like whispering, like playing drums. It's like, oh, this is. I never knew that. Cool. Good to know.
Yeah, I honestly did not know that till right now. I only ever had seen that with Don Henley of the Eagles.
Yep.
And Seven Dust. So.
Do you guys know that band Beloved?
No.
They were on, I think, Solid State or, Tooth and Nail. Solid State or Tooth and Nail, one of those. Same thing. The drummer does all the screaming.
That's got to be so much work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's some talent. Yeah, another little tidbit on the drummer. His name's Jared Montang. I think I'm pronouncing that right. He wrote a book in 2017 called True Rock Stars, 12 Guiding Principles for Success and Happiness. So he's also an author.
Huh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's no longer in the band. Taproot's only two original members now. But I kind of want to check out that book. I feel like there might be some nerd insight in there from touring stories from back in the day.
Yeah.
Might be a good guess.
I mean, maybe we'll hear him on the Patio Slate podcast in the
very Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows?
Yep. Damn, I wish I framed the question. Bassist? Guitarist? Drummer?
Next time. You got any more trivia?
Let's see. Those were kind of the two.
Perfect. But
yeah, those were kind of the two. They were a local band from 97 to 99. So here's actually one more. Fine, one more. Which songs off the album Gift were re-recorded off of demos?
Give us a hint.
I'm going to guess not Again and Again, because Again and Again seems like a label influence song.
False. Again and Again was a demo re-recorded for the album. Yep.
Interesting. All right.
Any
others? Emotional Times.
Nope.
Smile.
Nope.
All right. Well, I don't know, man.
Track two. So like you said, Twan, Again and Again was actually a demo. Believe, which is track six, Meant to Be, track seven, nine, Mirrors Reflection, and 11, Comeback. So quite a few.
Yeah.
Were demos re-recorded. So we always hear that thing, like you spend your whole life recording your first album. Clearly, that was the case with Taproot. So,
yep.
But
and that's,
yeah,
I mean,
Taproot.
It's a great record.
Yeah, I love this record. Actually, I always wanted to see this kind of like we talked about with other bands. To see this on wax would be really cool for me. But
or a 20-year tour.
Yeah, we might have seen that this year too. Yeah. Fuck you, 2020.
Yeah, 2020, fucking up nerdery.
So much nerdery would have been amazing this year. I mean, this is six albums that we've done now in this segment in one way or another. And we would have had another, I think there were 40 albums on the list that we just like came up with off the top of our heads.
Yeah.
There's mm-hmm. more than that. There's 50 or 60 or 70 from this year that we all were like, yeah, let's go see that live on a 20-year anniversary or a repress or whatever. So it sucks.
Glassjaw was one of them who I had tickets to in Boston.
Yep.
So hopefully that happens next year.
Fingers crossed for their 21st anniversary. The nice thing with 21 is like you can drink, so
right, you can celebrate.
Pretend that that's
it's
a
not
thing.
Like 27.
Yeah.
The 20.
Yeah, 27's nothing. Yeah. I mean, unless you're all those 27-year-old musicians who passed. But yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole different thing.
Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Amy Winehouse, right? There's a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, what are we? We just hit Q4, October 1st. I think we have another one of these
one
episodes
yeah.
in us.
And we'll spin it.
Maybe
we'll
in December.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. We might even really spin it.
Right.
Yeah.
If we can get some clearance from our legal team.
Hey, screw you. We just did the wheel 2 weeks ago. I didn't want to do the wheel again. We'll bring the wheel back in a couple of months.
Oh, I thought that went way over my head. I thought you meant actually playing the music.
No. I meant spinning it, like literally putting the rest of the albums in the wheel and spinning it.
Yeah. I think we should buy props from like the old set of like Price is Right and just like have all the.
That would be
pieces.
Fun. That would be the first time we ever made it to YouTube with our faces.
Yeah, that's true. We're going to wear Slipknot masks.
That's actually a great idea. We'll wear Slipknot masks and we'll put that on YouTube. That might happen before the end of the year. I'm not going to lie. Oh, man. We could use it as a PSA. Wear a mask.
Yep.
You know, take care of your friendly neighbors. Wear a mask.
You'd have to consult with legal on that. Like for all the names, like Plinko. Remember the one where you drop the coin down or whatever?
Plinko, oh, yes. Yeah. Plinko. If we could make Plinko happen, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that's easy. That's easy.
Yeah. My wife's pretty crafty. She could probably make a Plinko board for us.
Nice.
We like drop the thing down and it's like, oh man, it might like, oh, Slipknot, yeah.
Game show. This is game show nerdery.
Oh man, we should stop telling everybody our ideas.
I know, yeah. No more ideas. No, this was a fun one, guys. We'll probably wrap it up there, but yeah, we'll do another one of these late, you know, another couple months before the turn of the new year.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Hit us on the socials at Patio Slave, Twitter, Instagram. Check us on YouTube, Patio Slave Podcast there, patioslavepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to hit us up on the email, we're there, man. We answer everybody. We're down to talk with anybody who wants to nerd out with us. So throw us a line.
Yeah, man. We're all about it. We'll see you guys next week.
Peace, pod heads.
Thanks for listening. Cheers.